everyone. Welcome to the Slice of Finance podcast. I'm your host, Jared Taylor. Joining me today is Chris Lay, the founder, the founding partner, right, of Leonid. Chris, how are you?
Perfect. I'm doing great. Good morning. How are you doing, Jared?
Doing well. Let's dive right in. Tell the audience about yourself.
Sure. I come from a multi-generational Marine Corps family. I'm, though, very much the black sheep of my household, as having never had the honor of serving. I am at heart, a biology nerd. So my PhD work was in neurobiology and focused around traumatic and concussive brain injury therapies, stuff you could do in the back of a Humvee or a helicopter to buy somebody that's had a head injury and a brain bleed more time. I went on to commercialize some of that thesis work through a startup company, and that experience really lit a fire under me in the same way as when I first discovered the brain. From the startup I was involved with called UltraWave, attended business school. I met my co-founder, James Parker, at business school, and I moved into finance from there, working at a number of different funds, first in Los Angeles and then launching Leonid in 2019. My co-founder and I really hit it off in business school almost immediately. James also comes from a multi-generational service family background, and also comes from a technical education background into business school. So his education was in astrophysics. From Rice University, where James was an undergrad, first job out of college was at NASA, at Mission Control. From Mission Control, James moved into the intelligence community, working in some active warfighter support roles from space-based assets, and then came over to the West Coast to Los Angeles at business school, where we attended USC. Post-business school, James moved into a career in workouts, restructuring, turning around struggling business units, and I moved into private equity. In all of those cases, I would say the reason why James and I had remained friends and colleagues was really around this idea of approaching entrepreneurial challenges, business issues, from an analytically rigorous standpoint, right? We're scientists and engineers at heart. And in launching Leonid Capital Partners, we did so with a broad recognition that there was a vast, rapidly growing capital vacuum within the U.S. national security, intelligence, and space communities. More specifically, what I mean is these companies are working with the federal government as a customer. They're typically highly IP-driven, highly technical companies, right? You can think blockchain technology used to secure data encryption. You could think rocket propulsion technology. These companies are working with SpaceX. They're working with the federal government. They're working with the large tech companies, all the names that you can imagine, right? And they're often venture-backed or aspire to be so. The real challenge that they face in our marketplace is that banks will not lend against government contracts. And they don't do so because the government reserves the right to cancel any contract at any time for any reason with 30 days notice. And so if, you know, from the lens of your more sort of traditional banker, they say, look, I don't want to lend against a contract that could, at least from my perspective, be canceled at the drop of a hat. Our viewpoint is entirely the opposite. Having been a contract recipient as a grad student myself, my co-founder having administered a lot of federal programs when he was working both at NASA and across the government ecosystem, our take ultimately is no. Respectfully, the banks have it dead wrong. These contracts are exceptionally lendable, high-value assets that our clients can leverage to secure venture debt financing, acquisition financing, working capital loans, all of the things that we can provide in order to help them meet and achieve the growth objectives they've set out for themselves.
It's kind of interesting, though, that, okay, a bank won't lend the money, but if the bank's in trouble, they're looking to the government for a bail. I don't know. It's kind of a weird situation. And it's also, but also, I think there's also another concern here where it's kind of wild to me that the government can do that. Like with the 30, like that doesn't even,
yeah,
it's like, and they kind of have to take that, or is there any negotiate, like, have you seen deals happen where they can extend that? I'm sure there might be other circumstances, right? And then also, I guess part two to that question, there is the risk that they can get out within that 30 day period, but like, how often does that happen? Because you're also looking at it, you know, through your risk is a little bit different how you're looking at it than the banks.
Sure. Yeah. No. Yeah. Like, I think you're really touching on the real core issues at stake within our investment strategy. So, across history and across government department, no, the federal government reserves the right at all times to cancel a project, right? Like, that is largely an immutable power that they reserve for themselves. So one has to certainly contend with that, both as a government contracting company, but also as ourselves, as we're formulating the right capital solution for our borrowing clients. We're able to get comfortable in structuring up corporate financing based on these contracts. You know, again, hearkening back to our roots as engineers and scientists, to get comfortable with it, we started to dive into the data, and we asked ourselves, in putting together a proprietary data set, right? It's composed of over 78 million contracts specific to our space, represents about 20 years of contracting performance data across the government ecosystem. We asked ourselves a very straightforward question in looking at this data. It was like, look, it's inarguable that the government can cancel these contracts, but how often do they actually do so in our niche specifically? And at the end of the day, when we look at the data, it's very, very clear. There are huge parts of the government contracting landscape that the government can and does with real frequency cancel contracts. So the banks aren't necessarily irrational in that conclusion. It just so happens that there are a number of very discrete contract types that our client base leverages and services all the time, where the cancellation rate is vanishingly low. So much so that our core investment thesis really has become, these contracts exist as off-balance sheet assets on our clients' books that the market's mispriced. Like, if I can think of it really in a financial term in that way, that's the core opportunity that our strategy addresses.
When you're crafting these, when you're working with clients, I'm assuming you've kind of baked in the risk of these various industries, which is why you tend to focus in on, right, aerospace, defense, cybersecurity. Is that go into, like, okay, it's just like anything, right? How there's certain banks that only focus on lending in certain areas. You really dive into those areas, and you're like, I'm assuming, you know, we're able to understand the risk of those relationships within those industries with the government better than most banks. I don't want to put words in your mouth, so I'm assuming that's the case.
No, yeah, you're spot on. Exactly so. There are definitively areas where we feel like our background and core competencies align well with the opportunity, and others where it simply does not, right? So as like a very sort of edge case examples, we're very, very comfortable transacting within, as an example, space propulsion, right? That's an area that my co-founder spent a great deal of time working in, both within and without the government spectrum. So that's an area where, you know, we'll transact with a lot of alacrity, right? I'll contrast that against, say, something like a construction project. You know, these could be, on the construction side, multi-million dollar fantastic contracts with exceptional properties to them. It just so happens that I'm not the guy you want diligencing the pouring of a foundation on an airbase in Omaha, right? I very much does not speak to our background or sort of our areas of expertise. So we would avoid something like a construction project. Not that that's not a great contract, not that it's not a valuable opportunity for that potential group. It's just not, to your point, not really within our investable fairway, if you want to call it that.
When a client works with you, can you explain to me like what that experience looks like, maybe from initial interest to finally getting the assuming that they go through all the hoops, everything is aligned. What does that process look like?
Yes. Yeah. I have found, not in every case, but in many cases, when our team first encounters a new potential client, their immediate question, And I understand, quite rightly so, right? Like, I've sat on their side of the table before, so I appreciate where they're coming from. But the question is typically, look, I'm going to throw some basic numbers at you in terms of my company's financial performance. How much money can I secure from you, Leonid? And what's it going to cost me? And again, I get it, right? Like, at the end of the day, they need to know what their cost of capital is. It's critical for them to make their capital planning. Where we will really dive in on an initial call is understanding very, very clearly what is this company, what is this entrepreneur's circumstance, where are they trying to get to next, what are the objectives they're trying to meet in the near term and medium term, right? Let's call it the next 6 months, 12, 18 months out. With that information in hand, we will immediately begin structuring up a facility that can help them, at least from the financial side of thing, attack the goals that they're trying to achieve next, right? In a growth capital or bridge financing manner, right? The most typical situation is we're encountering a potential client that they're doing great work. They might have a great deal of track record and history, but they've reached capacity either from an HR standpoint or they're trying to secure some additional sort of capital capability that will allow them to grow, hire additional new talent, bring on additional hard assets that will increase their capacity, allow them to take on additional like-kind work. And so understanding what the financial requirements are, the timing of that, and how they want to orchestrate executing on those new hires alongside the contract that they've currently won, that's the key for us. Because ultimately, look, we're an investment fund. We want to make a good return for our investors. But the only way that we're going to do that is to absolutely ensure that our borrowers have exceptional outcomes. They do great work, and we're helping them in a minute way through financing. If they have great outcomes, they're going to tell their friends, colleagues, contracting officers, which just invariably begets new great opportunities for us. If we're successful in that endeavor, we're going to be successful for our investors. If we're successful for our investors, our team is successful as well. I love the very tight linkage, the feedback loop that really is all driven and predicated upon putting the optimal capital solution in front of our borrowers and helping them to achieve great outcomes. And we do that in addition to our financing by helping out in many cases by making additional connections, either to colleagues in the space that might complement their operations day to day, or even in many cases, helping them secure follow-on venture capital. We work very, very closely with a number of the venture capital teams that are active in our space. And in that partnership, you know, we see companies go on to drive great valuations in their following rounds and largely fueled on the momentum that we've helped them to achieve.
How soon do you know typically, okay, this isn't a fit? Is it a fairly process or is, yeah.
No, another exceptional question. Within our first call, and those calls typically are fairly brief, I'd say a third of our pipeline is narrowed down. We'll probably lose another third of inbound calls as a result of diligence. And on the diligent side, it's typically a question of, okay, as we've dug in and really understand the contract nuances, there are clauses within that contract that would disallow us to finance the work. Or ultimately, there are aspects to the contract that's just not within our area of expertise to where we feel like we can be an effective value add. On the corporate side, quite honestly, we work with startups every day, people with brand new work, thin balance sheets. Maybe they have a burn rate on, right? There's a cash runway that they're contending with as they're in between venture rounds. All of that's perfectly acceptable, right? Would not be a showstopper for us in any way. And I think probably on the client profile side, it's likely where we differentiate ourselves the most in that we love working with new companies. We love working with people that are in sometimes challenged situations. If they're working on a contract type within our specific area of expertise, we likely can roll up sleeves and come up with a really creative solution to help them get where they're trying to go.
Chris, what excites you about what's next for the company?
There are many, many, many more of these inflection points to come. One of the things that I find most exciting, and I think our team, when we're out in the field meeting with new partners, finds most exciting, is that within the last 2 quarters, the work that we've been doing since 2019 has really begun to compound, and we've hit a particular inflection point in terms of, let's call it brand awareness in the marketplace. Whereas a year and a half ago, I'd attend a conference and spend a lot of times just sort of educating the people I interact with. Here's who we are, here's what we do. And when we're out in the field now, it's typically more, oh, someone's grabbing us. They see a logo on a bag or a jacket, right? Oh, Lean in Capital, great. I want to talk to you guys. This is what we're working on. We just won this contract. Let me share it with you. Let's sync up and figure out a way that we might be able to work together. That sort of energy and momentum, like as an entrepreneur myself, is so exciting. It makes me feel like, hey, gosh, the time, energy, treasure, blood, sweat, tears that we've put into building this platform is starting to pay off, and in a way that we're leaving a good taste in people's mouth, which, again, just critical to our success.
Well, I'm glad we were able to chat here today, Chris, and you'd tell us a little bit more and also show us some of the or share some of the I would say banging head on a desk moments that a government if like a lot of people I'm sure are going to take, like, if there was one thing, it's the headache of that fact that that can happen, right? Doesn't mean it always does, but it can. Really appreciate you sharing some more about the process with us, and hopefully we can chat again real soon.
I look forward to it. Thank you for the opportunity.